This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Wendy Mockey. From the rugby fields of Cairns, far north Queensland, to representing his country by captaining the Kumuls, Rod Griffin has carved out a career defined by resilience, leadership, and a deep commitment to giving back. A proud Papua New Guinean who made his mark in the game, Rod has played for clubs like the West Tigers, Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs, and Ipswich Jets. But his legacy extends beyond the field. Today, he's shaping the next generation of young athletes. From professional footy to mentoring aspiring players, Rod's journey is one of passion, perseverance, and purpose. Rod, welcome to Stories from the Pacific.
Thanks for having me, Wendy.
Now, Rod, you moved to Australia from PNG at a very young age. Whereabouts were you born in Papua New Guinea?
I was born in Wabak, up in the Angan province. So that was a while ago, and I moved over to Australia when I was 5 years old, at the top of my head. And then, yeah, flew down to Cairns and then been up in the Tablelands, grew up there in Atherton Tablelands, and then left school in 2004.
Amazing. And just to step it back,
Now
you mentioned you moved from PNG to Australia at the age of five.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that transition from PNG to Australia?
So, well, what I vaguely remember is just being where we're not really fortunate in regards to what we take here for granted in our living. So, say, my mum, my biological mother, she probably would have had to sell betel nuts in the market, working in the market, just, you know, scraping up money and then to send my brothers and my sisters through school. And then the reason being that I moved over here to Australia, well, fortunate enough, was I was given at birth to my auntie. And it's sort of customary that, you know, if you're struggling with the kids and that, and then you hand over. So I was adopted by my auntie, who actually met my father, who I've got the name Griffin from. He worked up in the mines up at Pogra. And then when they got married and moved down to Australia, they took me down with them. So, yeah, I was very fortunate to be given that opportunity. I don't think I'd be here if I didn't. So that was a while back.
Yeah. Now, how did rugby league become a part of your life?
I moved down here. I went to school up in Tolga Primary School. And some of the boys there, they played footy. And my older brother is actually Robert Teller. He played for the Kumuls, so the PNG Kumuls back in the days. He was the 5'8". And then obviously when you watch him and when he comes, some of the memories from when I was young was him coming back from the camps, the World Cup camps and tournaments. He'd bring back his bag and then all my siblings and us would go through the gear and take everything. Obviously, because I was the youngest, I never got anything.
You missed out.
Yeah, not the fact of missing out. They just wouldn't let me have anything. It's too small. Like to see them try it now.
Yeah. That playing field is very even right now.
Yeah. But I guess just watching him coming back and then, you know, having the memories of him playing, representing his country and how proud he was. And then obviously when I got the opportunity to start playing at a young age down here, at the age of 9, I then took it with both hands and said, okay, yep, I would love to play rugby league. So my father, so he said, all right, my old club is the Atherton Roosters, and then he used to play for them. So he took me down there, and then I signed on at the age of 9. Played, that's where I started, and I never looked back. From 9 years old, I played for Atherton Roosters all the way up to under 18s. And then I debuted for A grade, local A grade, and then I moved down to Sydney to play with the West Tigers. I signed up with the West Tigers. Yeah.
Now, 9 is quite young to be recruited to play rugby league. I was wondering if there was like a particular moment in a game or at a particular age where you were like, oh, I could do this. I love this so much and I want to do this professionally. Was there a particular moment? And are you able to share that, please? Yeah.
Well, when it started getting serious was around 13, 14, when I started making rep teams. And then when I get to age 15 or 14, 15, I got tapped from an agent asking me if I'd want him to represent me to look for clubs, because there's a few clubs knocking. And I said, oh, yeah, didn't really think much of it. like just my dad's probably the same too, you know. He's being from Atherton and Tablelands, you don't really, all you do is play footy, go home, go to school, and then, you know, it's on repeat. So when stuff like that starts happening, it's like, oh, okay, yeah. So I guess at age of 14 or 15, you're like, oh, you could actually make a living out of this, because that's when you start getting recruited. Because even though it's still in Australia, it wasn't a reality, because you live, well, you know yourself, Wendy, growing up in the Tablelands, it's very small.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So and we didn't have the pathways that the kids do now, especially with your rugby league excellence programs at school. And we, especially up at Far North, yeah, there was no schools available. So the only way we could go through was making Peninsula. And that's when you made the rep teams, and that's how you get recognized. And then, you know, 10 heads, I guess. So when I started making those, that's when you start realizing, okay, you could really make a, you know, goal of this or a living when you start getting tapped from Cowboys Academy programs asking you to be part of their program. And they're like, okay. That's when start realizing that there's a pathway there for you.
Yeah. Now, your journey through rugby league wasn't a straight line. You moved around a lot, playing for different clubs. Can you take us through those early years, the highs and the lows of chasing that professional dream?
Yeah, pretty much. It was the lows. There wasn't really much of it. Like, I was just having fun playing football. You know what I mean? At the time when you're younger. And then when you get to the NRL, you're in there, you know, in a full-time system, your routine into what they do in your lifting component, your fitness, what you eat, you know, your recovery. It just, yeah, it was everything that I thought it would be. And then some,
mm-hmm.
because just the professionalism now, like especially later towards my career, like the earlier period, it was pretty full on. But yeah, it was everything that I thought it would be. But probably some of the lows would have been like when you're so close to making NRL debuts and then you get an injury.
Yeah,
or
right.
It's in a business. It's hard to explain, but it's like the legalities around it with the paperwork.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So back before it was the top 30, it was the top 25. And then I was sitting on the fringes of the top 25. But now it's easier to make crack into first grade because you can, I don't know what it is, go on a development contract and you can be, I don't know the rules around it now, but it seems more easier to make your debut. Where back then, unless you're in the top 25, you could not just be picked on a week-by-week basis. It had to be around Origin, and there was applause that saying that you could come in at certain times. So, yeah, a lot more paperwork. But, yeah, that's probably the most disappointing thing. It's a few times I was so close. I was 18th man, I think, 5 times in a row. And then on the week that I was meant to make my debut, I broke my arm.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
yeah, right.
Yeah. And then that took me out for the rest of the year. So
yeah, wow.
Yeah. And so you always have your ups and downs. So, yeah.
But can you tell us about the highs?
Well, the highs of footy, especially when I went towards my later years, at coming home to my wife and kids, so Brooke and Lockie, that were the pretty highs. Like, you know, getting to do something like that with them is you're in a full-time system playing football, but at the same time you have so much time on your hands where you can go and spend time with your kids and be with them and them being there and experiencing it with me.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I think that were the highs. And, yeah.
Speaking of the NRL system, what was it like breaking into the NRL as a young Papua New Guinean player?
To be honest with you, at the time, I didn't even think about that. It was more about me making it into the NRL, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trying to move from club to club. So when I first finished school at 2004, I didn't go straight into West Tigers. I went down to Wynnum Manly, down in the Queensland Cup, moving from Atherton Tablelands down to Brisbane. And then playing in that comp, I got asked to do the preseason with the Broncos the following year. But then at the same time, I got asked to go and move down to West Tigers on a full-time basis, which at the time my manager thought was the best approach for me. So I moved down there to West Tigers afterwards. But, it was just pretty hard. You've got to think about it. Unless unless you're in a system already, it's trying to tap into it. There's probably 50 other plus other kids that are trying to be in the same position, trying to do the same thing. So, yeah.
Now, you've played for some big clubs, you know, like West Tigers, Ipswich Jets, the Black Hawks. What stands out to you as a career-defining moment?
Career-defining moment would probably be winning that at 1 year, one Queensland Cup championship with the Ipswich Jets in 2015. And then at the same time, I got re-signed with West Tigers to move back down to Sydney. And then I also had my firstborn child, Lockie.
Wow.
And then also got named captain for the PNG Kumuls.
Oof.
All in 1 year. So it was a massive, and that was a time that, I was at a good place, I guess.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Looking back, how did that moment shape you?
Looking back now, I think it probably made me and my wife very close, just in the fact that we've had a newborn child and then we had to pick up everything and then move, relocate from one city to another. So it was a lot, but yeah, thanks to my wife, Brooke, she just handled it so easy. She just made it look so easy. Like, I literally had to move down to Sydney and start pre-season with West Tigers while she was still at home back in Brisbane, getting everything, organising everything to come down all by herself. And I think, yeah, that probably takes a lot. The penny dropped that it just made us a bit more tighter than we were parents. And you know what I mean? It just, yeah, that was a very defining moment for me when I became a father for the first time.
Yeah. I love that. It's definitely takes a, you know, working as a team on and off the field, you know, so your wife being a part of your career and your success as well is wonderful to hear as well. And I think that's really important. Now, just to pivot, you've dedicated the last several years to working with young people through your previous work with the Clontarf Foundation and now at Trinity Bay High School in Cairns, far north Queensland. I'm wondering what inspired you to step into this mentorship role?
So when I was part of the PNG Kumuls all through the camps, just opportunities that I guess kids in PNG didn't have in regards to clear pathways into NRL or into different type of education, just opportunities outside of PNG. And then working at Clontarf for 7 years in Townsville when I transitioned from NRL into the Queensland Cup with Blackhawks. And then that's where I got my first gig with Clontarf Foundation through Kerwin High. So Kerwin High is a rugby league excellence program. It's pretty big in Australia, one of the biggest ones. And being part of that and seeing what they did through the school and with Clontarf also, I was like, God, this would be something. Imagine if something like this was in PNG, a school where it dedicates its works with rugby league plus education as a pathway for kids into NRL or system or higher learning in some whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rod, you mentioned that rugby league is a part of the curriculum at Trinity Bay High School. Yeah. Is that the Rugby League Excellence Program specifically? Is that what that is?
Yes. So it's a Rugby League Excellence Program at T Bay, but it's a timetable into the regular schooling. You know what I mean? So if that makes sense. So the idea is if we have that here and then we get kids from PNG coming down to here to participate in that program, not only will they get their footy IQ, but they'll also get a higher level of education. So a rule here with the school is they have to have an above C standard, so they're passing all their subjects before they get picked to play. So if you're not passing your subjects or behavioural issues at school, you don't get picked to play. So you don't make the excellence program.
Right. So you have to have, yeah, that makes sense. So you have to be able to achieve sort of good marks academically to be able to maintain or be accepted into that program. So you've got that there going for you as well. Is that correct?
Yes. So it's a student first and then an athlete.
And can you speak specifically into how that is a game changer?
It's a big game changer, especially up in PNG because it's, I'm not sure about the level of education up there. The standard is probably a little bit lower than the Australian standard. So if you get a kid through a program where you bring them down here. They go to a school like this. They're getting their footy IQ. So that's out of the 5 days a week, they're getting about 3 to 4 sessions of rugby league on a weekly basis. And then going through that and also at the same time, they're getting their education, you know what I mean, hitting that QCE level. So when they do finish school, say there's a kid that comes down here, goes to year 10, that's a senior learning, that's when it starts, doing all those things, going to grade 11, same thing, grade 12, same thing. And if he finishes, if he doesn't go into he or she, so they have girls and boys provided, if they don't go into either an NRL team or go to higher level of football, they still graduate with a pathway into university or go to TAFE or get quals to do, you know, to start their own business. But the door is right there. With Trinity Bay, our line manager, see for the international program, so there's an international program in Trinity Bay that supports that. So as soon as they come here, air record is 100% success rate for PNG kids that have been through the program.
Yeah, incredible.
So it's massive. Yeah, and she's been here for 15 years.
Yeah, amazing. This program is creating really amazing pathways, right?
Yes.
For these young athletes. And you've already seen successes with PNG students getting exposure to the Cowboys development pathways. I guess I'm wondering, what's the long-term vision for this program?
Long-term vision would be to have the fluctuation of kids coming on an annual basis, when they're coming from PNG into Australian system, where they're starting at grade 10 or even earlier. And then they're going through that same process where if it's football, they're here on a football scholarship just to set themselves up. They're getting their footy IQ plus education. So when they're finishing, you know what I mean? They can go either in university TAFE or they can go into rugby league if they're good enough. But the long-term goal is if we get some kind of funding or support that can allow that to happen where the kids are coming in, because it's nothing can run without money. So through the international program, where the international program's already been at Trinity Bay for 15 years and the rugby league has just come into it within the last 3 years. So and hand in hand, they work well together, where you get international kids coming into the school while playing, participating in the sports center and getting the education at the same time. So if we get a constant flow of this, where you get, say, let's say in year 10, you get 5 girls or 5 boys coming on a scholarship basis for 3 years, where they go 10, 11, and 12. By the time they graduate, they either go back, give back to PNG, or, you know what I mean, give back to PNG as a sports physio or a CEO or a doctor. It doesn't have to be rugby league. The picture is they're getting a good education. Rugby league is only second to that.
Yeah, you know amazing. What
I mean? Yeah. If they're good enough to go into the NRL, their fallback is they can get an education. They have a pathway, clear pathway, what do you call it, access or marks already that they can get into, their QCE points. They already have that 21 points and above to get into university.
Yeah, and using rugby league as a jump off to other things that, you know, to be able to be successful. Yeah.
Yeah. If that, not all everyone's going to go through the rugby league out of those kids that come down. But imagine if you had 20 of those kids come down and say 2 of them make it into the NRL, and then 28 of them are educated adults that can go back to PNG and give back. That's bloody massive.
That's massive. Now, I'm wondering, because you mentioned that programs need a funding, right, to be able to continue to run and help young people achieve these successes and be able to really, you know, live up to their true potentials in whatever field they choose. I'm wondering, how can people support this program or these initiatives?
It's the way for them to support is obviously get back in touch with us just to see how we can have that link with them. But it's the funding for the fees to come down. So for a kid to come down, it's roughly around $30,000. And that includes the boarding, the food, all of that covered just for one year. And then that's through EQ, so Education of Queensland. They pay that and then they come through and then they stay with us for that. And then we cover everything in regards to education and then homestay style, who they stay with. Everything is set. They just have to pay the fee. But that requires for them to sponsor the school. So if they get in touch with us and then say, oh, I'm excited about the program and say, I want to help a kid come down here, we've already got out of those kids that been identified, say, if they want to go through the football program, there are three of them that are waiting now just for the right funding to come in so they can go to school here and then go straight into their system with their Cowboys or whoever, mm-hmm. but they'll be part of the school. Yeah, hope that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. A big challenge for young PNG players is the lack of structured pathways into professional rugby league. How does this program help bridge the gap?
Well, if they're starting at that young age, so if it's 15 and under, so when you're 15, you're in grade 10. So if you come earlier or if you start at grade 10, you're doing footy IQ stuff on a daily basis. And what I mean by footy IQ is you've got what? Today I've got like two lessons that I have to go to. Mm-hmm, well, I'm not now because I'm in the interview, but that I'll be going to where we're teaching them structure stuff. We're teaching them defense, how to tackle, how to pass, you know what I mean? How to draw and pass, how to play eyes up footy, how to watch out for seeing out of body language or playing consistent for 18 minutes rather than playing for 20 minutes of a game. But you're teaching that from a young age and you're teaching them routine. We're teaching them how to get up at a certain time, being there early, going to the gym, learning how to lift properly with a person right there teaching you how to do it, a teacher, a qualified, fully qualified teacher, what food to eat, how to self-manage your injuries and recovery after games. So all of these things we're teaching them at a young age. So by the time they get to 18 or 19 and 20, they're ready because you're doing mm-hmm. all the basics, all your foundation stuff at that young age already.
Yeah, right.
So,
mm-hmm.
So by the time they're ready, like say if they get picked up by an NRL team or they go into the Cowboys system, they're hitting the ground running and not starting at your basics on how to eat, how to lift, you know what I mean, how to run, how to play structured footy, how to all the little things that they take for granted, where in PNG they don't really have that. You know what I mean? Like it's not there. Where they're getting picked up at 20, 21 and then trying to teach them all these things. Or what they should be concentrating at that age is going into a team and then learning their plays or learning their structures or their culture within the team rather than trying to learn the basics on how to catch properly, how to release or how to play eyes up footy. All the little things are how to eat, how to lift, all those things that we can teach them at that young age. Mm-hmm. They're trying to learn that when they're 20, 21, 22, 23 at that age when they should be just going, hitting the ground, running, knowing how to lift and worry about getting selected rather than worrying about how to lift in the gym properly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With the NRL expanding and a PNG team now potentially joining the competition, do you see a future where more PNG players will have a clearer route to the professional level through programs like this?
At the moment, I believe they're putting things in place up there in PNG. But, yeah, they clearly need to have things like this up there for it to move forward. Like, you've got to have a foundation when you're starting club. Not only in the NRL, but in, say, if you want to get the Hunters or your Digicel Cup teams up there, they need to have bases where they have structured junior programs in place to feed into each one of those clubs. And then those clubs and that can feed into your Hunters. And then your Hunters or your other Queensland Cup, say, or New South Wales Cup teams can fit into then the national NRL team that's about to go up there. So you've got to have a junior foundation. So you've got to have constant players rotating through. So to answer your question, I guess it would provide them that opportunity if they're starting to do it. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rod, if you had one message for young players, especially those from PNG who dream of making it into rugby league, what would it be?
That it can be a reality and it's not a dream. It's not far-fetched, especially with the new team coming in. you stay focused and, yeah, don't give up. It's not that far-fetched.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Now, final question. This is something I'd love to ask all my guests. If there's one thing about your culture that isn't widely known or celebrated, but you believe the world should understand, what would that be?
Widely known, not widely known or celebrated.
Yeah, yeah. That isn't widely known or celebrated.
Yeah.
But you believe people should know or at least understand, what would it be?
It's hard to say. I haven't been up home in ages too, so.
No, I was going to say, but you've got your, you know, the, like stuff that you can draw from as, you know, you being Papua New Guinean, living in far north Queensland, like around Australia, like that you've experienced in your own life, that would be useful to share, maybe?
Yeah. Useful to share my culture. Hard to say. Like, there's so many things up in PNG or in general that probably it's just that belonging within it's a, you know, like a family or a structural environment. Like you're here, I'm here, and then you tend to forget about it. But when you go back up home, they bring you down to ground straight away, especially your siblings. And then they know, like, nah, you're this part of this family, like the claim. It's so strong that they just, and not many people, I don't know if many people know, but when you, the sense of belonging to a family or a tribe, it's so strong. They will break down. Like, I know for a fact, every time I go there and I get a lesson on who or where I'm from, that this is connected to this. Every time I meet someone, they'll, without even pulling out a book or any detail, they know it off the top of their head on how I'm linked to that individual from the top to the bottom. You know what I mean? That the storytelling, I guess, that is on the spot, and it just happens just like that. And you're like, oh, okay. They're so good at that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, off the cuff probably, too.
Off the cuff. You would understand. Like, I'll go home and I'm like, meet someone new. And then my big brother will be like, you know who that is? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. He goes, well, this is how you connected to him. His mom and our bubu were sisters, and then that's their second born from this. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But yeah, just the cultural awareness of where we're from, who we are as a family, and how we align to where we belong through storytelling or at that moment, it's just amazing. It amazes me every single time that all my siblings know this, and I think that for a fact that I didn't get to grow up with that. It's, I guess I'm jealous in a way every time I go back, because they break down everything, barriers for you to explain to you that this is how this person is in part of your life, and this is how this person is linked through you. And yeah, it's, I guess that's the most amazing thing. And that will break it down to the people that, like our grandparents that have passed away, and this is how they connected. I'm like, far out. So storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. That was so beautiful. Thank you, Rod.
That makes sense.
That made so much sense on so many levels. Yeah. And I think a lot of our listeners will understand that very deeply. So thank you. Rodney, thank you for sharing your incredible journey with us. You are a testament to where passion, perseverance, and purpose can lead. Your legacy on the field and off it reminds us all that true greatness is measured by the heart you put into every step. We're grateful for everything you've done for our communities and excited to see the chapters yet to be written. Thank you, True.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Wendy.
You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific, presented by me, Wendy Mockey, and produced by Jaden Mailata. If you like this episode and want more, be sure to listen to other episodes in our program by searching up Stories from the Pacific on our website or wherever you get your podcasts. This story was produced on the lands of the Yagara and Turrbal people.